A thud in the downstairs hallway causes Maggie to jump and clasp her hands to the bodice of her yellow dress. The permanent chicken bone of fear that resides in her chest makes a painful turn. She presses her fists deep into the pain. She waits. Sweat beads on her arms and between her breasts. Mama Randolph does not come yet. Maggie turns away from the wedding portrait on the nightstand and tries to remember the song she sang in church before the church closed down. But all she can remember are some psalms. She walks to the clean spot on the bed and sits. She looks out the window, at the footed wardrobe, at the stained chair near the locked door. Above the chair is a Jesus picture. If there was some way to know what Jesus thought of the change, Maggie thinks she could bear it. If Maggie truly believed that Jesus had a handle on the walking dead, and that it was just a matter of time before he put a stop to it all, then Maggie would live out her confinement with more faith. But the picture shows a happy, smiling Jesus holding a little white lamb, with other white lambs gathered at his feet. He does not look like he has any comprehension of the horror that walks the world today. If he did, shouldn't he be crashing from the sky in a wailing river of fire to throw the dead back into their graves until the rapture? Maggie slips from the bed and kneels before the picture. Jesus' smiling face moves her, and his detachment haunts her. Her hands fold into a sweaty attitude of prayer, and in a gritty voice she repeats, "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want." The crash in the hall just outside the door hurls Maggie to her feet. Her hands are still folded, but she raises them like a club. The sound was that of a food tray being carelessly plopped onto the bare hall floor, and of dishes rattling with the impact. Mama Randolph brings Maggie her breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day, but today Mama is early. Maggie looks at the screened window and wishes she could throw herself to the ground below without risking everlasting damnation from suicide. There is no clock in the room, but Maggie knows Mama is early. The sun on the floor is not yet straddling the stain on the carpet, so it is still a ways from noon. But Maggie knows that Mama has something on her mind today besides food. Mama's excitement has interrupted the schedule. Mama has been marking the calendar as well. Today, Mama is thinking about grandchildren. Maggie holds the club of fingers before her. It will do no good, she knows. She could not strike Mama Randolph. Maybe Jesus will think it is a prayer and come to help her. The door opens and Mama Randolph comes in with a swish of old apron and a flourish of cloth napkin. The tray and its contents are visible behind her in the hall, but the meal is the last of Mama's concerns. When business is tended, the meal will be remembered. "Maggie," says Mama, "what a pretty sight you are there in your dress. Makes me think of a little yellow kitten." The cloth napkin is dropped onto the back of the stinking chair, and Mama straightens to take appraisal of her daughter-in-law. There is something in Mama's apron pocket that clinks faintly. "Well, you going to stand there, or do you have a good morning?" Maggie looks toward the window. Two stories is not enough to die, and if she died, she would only become one of the walking dead. She looks back at Mama. "Good morning," she whispers. "And to you," Mama says cheerily. "Can you believe the heat? I pity the farmers this year. Corn is just cooking on the stalks. You look to the right out that window and just over the trees, and you can see a bit of John Johnson's crop. Pitiful thing, all burned and brown." Mama tips her head and smiles. The apron clinks. Neither says anything for a minute. Mama's eyes sparkle in the heavy hot air. The dead folks' eyes sparkle when they walk about, but Maggie knows Mama is not dead. The older woman is very much alive, with all manner of plans for her family. Then Mama says, "Sit down." Maggie sits on the clean spot on the mattress. Mama touches her dry lips. She says, "You know, home ain't a home without the singing of little children." "Oh, dear Jesus," thinks Maggie. "When Quint was born, I was complete. I was a woman then. I was whole. I'd done what I was made to do. A woman with no children can't understand that till she's been through it herself." Maggie feels a large drop of sweat fall and lodge above her navel. She looks at the floor and remembers what Quint's shoes looked like there, beside hers, in the night after they'd climbed beneath the covers. Precious shoes, farmer's shoes, with the sides worn and the dark coating of earth on the toes. Shoes that bore the weight of hard work and love. Shoes Quint swore he would throw away when he'd earned enough money to build the new house. Shoes that Maggie was going to keep in her cedar chest as a memory of the early days. Quint doesn't wear shoes anymore.